The College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock. Now here's your host, Kevin Negandhi.
It's a Wednesday here, and welcome to the podcast. Kevin Negandhi and David Pollock's going to join us in a few minutes, as well as Adam Rittenberg, who will break down what's going on at Notre Dame after some positive COVID tests as they had to push their game back with Wake Forest and postpone it. So we'll have those details from Adam. Also, Pollock's going to make his picks, give us his dude of the week, and we go a little bit more in depth in the SEC and the Big 12 and the ACC. Check out this week's Marty Smith's America podcast. He has Penn State tight end Pat Freiermuth. Love the young man. Sky's the limit on his talent as the Big Ten has decided to opt back in. That is Marty Smith's America. Check it out where you subscribe and get your podcasts. In the meantime, we've got Adam Rittenberg first, college sports reporter, breaking things down on what's going on at Notre Dame. And it's great to have college football insider Adam Rittenberg joining us now. And busy week. And I think I'm going to say that every single time I introduce you because fluid situation continues. The big story, of course, is Notre Dame and the positive test on Monday, 2 days after beating USF 52-0. What more can you tell us on what happened on Monday and where the program is as they postpone the matchup against Wake Forest this coming weekend?
Sure. Well, you know, again, Notre Dame had done a really good job keeping the positive test down. Their latest, you know, the round of testing last week between Tuesday and Friday yielded 4 positive tests. A number of others put into contact tracing, and then Monday's test, 7 positives. So now you're dealing with, I think, 23 total players who are essentially out of the mix for at least the next 10 days. And that led to the postponement of the Wake Forest game and a pause on all football activities. That game we know now will be taking place on December 12th. So even though they have the mutual open date next week, I think because of the amount of time that we know, you know, at least 23 Notre Dame players will be unable to do anything, that was just going to be butting up too close to the October 3rd date. So instead, Notre Dame and Wake will play or scheduled to play on December 12th, which is just a week before the ACC championship game. And then Wake Forest's game against Campbell now has been moved up from October 9th to Friday, October 2nd. So they'll still be playing next week, but Notre Dame now will have 2 weeks, hopefully, to get things settle down as far as the virus goes, and then they'll get back into action.
Okay, the ramifications here as well, you know, how does this affect a team like USF? Because, you know, we talked briefly about it on SportsCenter yesterday. When you're playing against somebody, right, you know, the contact tracing and tracking this virus after you get all the positive tests, it's not just isolated to one team. How is USF handling it, and what's going on with the program?
Right. You know, as we talked about yesterday, USF had negative tests before the game. They had a negative test after the game, but coaches were still reviewing the game tape to see who might have to be in contact tracing based on who tested positive for Notre Dame with their post-game round of tests. So, you know, South Florida has paused this activity because I think it's the smart thing to do until they go through another round of testing, which could take place very, very soon. And then they'll make a decision at some point with their game against Florida Atlantic over the weekend. So I think this is just a cautionary step at this point because they played a team that yielded some positive tests. But we have not had, Kevin, really any instances of games causing the virus to spread from one team or to another, at least definitively. So that would be notable for a team to enter a game with 2 negative tests, come out of the game with a positive test, with another negative test, and then still have to postpone because of contact tracing or because of additional positive tests, because they played a team that has had a bit of an outbreak in Notre Dame. So that's, I think, the notable thing for South Florida. Hopefully it doesn't come to that, but if it does come to that, it will kind of be a first in what we've had with these postponements. Most of them have taken place because of what's happened with an individual team, not passing it to another team because of a game, but that could certainly happen with South Florida. Hopefully it doesn't.
And we'll continue to follow the story as it develops later on the week. But the role of daily testing here in college football, for our audience, how important is that specifically right now?
I think it's the key to having the season go off. It's already happening, but I think for a season to be full and robust and not have so many interruptions, I think the daily rapid testing is the key. I know some around college football are not doing it, or their medical folks are not seemingly on board as much as they are in leagues like the Big Ten and the Pac-12. The Big Ten has really no choice with the season that is trying to pack, 8-9 games into a 9-week window. They have to have the rapid testing, the antigen testing, be successful. And I'll just read you this quote from Northwestern's team doctor, Jeff Mianis. We did a piece, Heather Dinich and I, on the Big Ten's road to coming back and how the rapid testing was so important. He said last week, "You're catching somebody with a positive before they're even contagious. That's a huge breakthrough in this. If we can do that on a daily basis, which is what's in our proposal, then we can identify people before they're even infectious, and we can remove them and really maintain the sanctity and health of the team. With daily antigen testing, if you're able to identify somebody before they're actually contagious, we can remove them, and it almost completely eliminates the need for contact tracing." So, I think people need to understand the reason these games are getting postponed is not necessarily because there's 30 positive COVID tests on the team. It's because there's 6 or 8 or 10, and then everybody they're in close contact with also is out. So if this rapid antigen testing is successful, I think it will certainly enhance the chances, even if there are a few tests, positive tests, it'll enhance the chances of that team not being wiped out for that following game or games.
And the big story, again, continues to be, how essential that is with the Big Ten's return. Pac-12 scheduled to meet tomorrow, their CEOs, which features presidents and chancellors on their future. How about the Mountain West here? Where does the Mountain West and potentially the MAC play a role here as this window of a return in mid to late October gets smaller and smaller?
Right. Well, the Mountain West, I really sense there's momentum to have a season here, maybe on the same exact timeline as the Big Ten that weekend of October 24th. The Mountain West presidents were set to meet on Friday. That meeting has been moved up to Thursday night. The coaches and athletic directors in the league are unanimous in wanting to play that weekend, October 24th. So and I think the league as well, the league office would like to get this confirmed. Now the presidents ultimately have to approve it. They're going to talk about their testing, the costs, the different options with testing. I know the Mountain West has already had conversations about testing agreements, but I really think there's a good chance that we see the Mountain West back on the field in about a month. I mean, Thursday is September 24th. We could see Mountain West football on the weekend of October 24th. I think some of the concerns about the local restrictions in California are not as severe as they were a few weeks ago. Same with the quarantine in Hawaii. I think the 2-week quarantine is going to be lifted October 15th in Hawaii. New Mexico, I know they still have some local restrictions. I'm not exactly sure yet where they're at, but I do sense that there's real momentum in the Mountain West. The MAC presidents did meet last night. They did not vote. There will be additional conversations this week, and I would anticipate a vote from the MAC as well for a 6-8 game season potentially starting in late October, early November. The issue for the MAC, probably more than any of these other leagues, Kevin, is financial. These daily rapid antigen tests are not cheap, as you'd imagine. Some of the other issues, support you have to get around these testing systems to have them be effective is not cheap. And so the MAC is a league that has some financial challenges, and I think that's what they're trying to work out. Sources in that league telling me, hey, if we're doing this, we need to be doing it the same way as the Big Ten. Otherwise, we're setting ourselves up for some problems, and it really isn't fair to our players and coaches and everyone else. I really do believe we'll see everybody back, though. I think by the end of the week, you mentioned the Pac-12. I think we're going to see all 10 conferences having a fall season.
Whoa, we're burying the lead. That is a big statement, and that's a good statement. The question will be the timing, right? The timing of the return.
Yeah,
For especially the Pac-12. We'll have to see that play out. If they want to make a return to finish the season in the fall, you've got to have October 31st as potentially the date, because if you get into November, there's no way you're in a playoff conversation, and there's no way you have the flexibility. Or maybe the long-term goal in that conference is, the goal is, hey, let's have a representative to play in the Rose Bowl against the Big Ten team, yeah, right? Because there are different priorities for different conferences. I could be wrong, but maybe big picture, it's, hey, safety, making sure, of course, that goes without saying, but maybe it's not the playoff if we're coming back. It's because we want to make sure we could still have the Rose Bowl. Have you heard anything like that?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think they want to have a meaningful season, to your point, Kevin. I mean, if you start in early November, even though I've heard November 7th from some sources in the Pac-12, you're only playing, you know, 6 or 7 games, maybe, before a postseason opportunity. And, you know, that's not a lot, especially when there's a decent chance that, you know, one or more of those games has to be postponed and you don't really have a whole lot of time to make them up. But I, you know, they would love to be part of the playoff conversation. I mean, you know, is there any flexibility in the playoff semifinals and championship dates? I don't think there's much, but who knows? If these postponements continue, when does that conversation have to take place? I know those games, this year on January 1st, the traditional New Year's Day games, could there be flexibility in a year that we've seen a ton of flexibility? Everything's had to be moved around in 2020. So could that be the case with the playoff? If not, I think it's going to be very difficult for the Pac-12 to be part of it unless they can get on the field by Halloween.
Fingers crossed, Adam. Some good stuff, great information. And it would be a big turn of events if we see the Pac-12, the MAC, as well as the Mountain West return, and those decisions made by the end of the week. Again, we'll be cautiously optimistic. That has been the theme of the fall here when it comes to college football. Always bringing it. Thank you, Adam.
You bet. Thanks, Kevin.
Back here on the College Football Podcast, David Pollock joining us, as he usually does, midweek as we get you ready for the schedule and the SEC openers. Looking forward to that. But first off, Pog, let's talk about what, you know, the reaction from Notre Dame. And Adam went on in a little bit and gave us some of the news and the details. I wanted to get your initial thoughts on Notre Dame having, you know, 7 players test positive with COVID-19 out of the 94 tests, according to the school on Monday. 13 players are in isolation. USF has put a pause on their practice because they played on Saturday against Notre Dame. What's your reaction to this concept now of postponing Wake Forest and then scheduling that game at a later date, and kind of the ramifications of a huge program encountering something like this?
Well, it's going to happen more and more. This isn't the last team that's going to deal with it. My God, look at Houston. Houston can't even play a game. I mean, Houston's trying everything they can to try to play football this season, and everything has gone wrong. I mean, Rice game postponed, Memphis game, Baylor game. So, you know, it's going to happen, you know, throughout the season. And listen, it's an obligation for coaches and players to take this serious, and they're going to have to do this as we continue to go on. And this is why the Big Ten having games back to 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 back are going to be incredibly difficult, and it's going to be incredibly challenging for them to continue to do the season. So it's how it has to happen. It's the right thing, and it's not going to stop this throughout this whole football season. Get used to it. We're going to see more and more of it.
Excellent point. Again, because you have the flexibility, like the open dates that are in front of Notre Dame. It looks like the Wake Forest Notre Dame game will be played on December 12th. Now, Notre Dame had an open date on October 3rd. It looks like Wake is moving a game that they had originally on October 9th to October 2nd. So that date, I thought it just fit the schedule where you could potentially play that game October 3rd, but I think they're being super precautious and making sure everybody's taken care of. And just get ready. I think on a week-to-week basis, we're going to play this game on who's available and also the depth of a team. And we won't know the depth of a team. Like you brought up, you know, Houston and their battle with Baylor, and Baylor couldn't play because they didn't have enough depth at positions to play. Yep. Dana Holgorsen was not pleased about it on the short notice, but that back and forth between Holgorsen and the AD at Baylor, it's college football. It's the state that we're living in right now, where just be prepared that there's going to be last moment decisions made and moving forward. I find it fascinating that you know, we used to make these announcements. Oh, you know, such and such is playing such and such in 2030. And we're you know, 10, 12 years away from that game. And now we've got to schedule days, you know, games within 24 to 48 hours moving forward, because you have to be adaptable in these times if you want to get games played. The other big story this week, Deion Sanders becoming the head coach of Jackson State. That is a groundbreaking decision by both the school and the legend of Deion. What are your thoughts on that? Because it is not easy for anybody to jump from, you know, being an analyst to then suddenly becoming a head coach, but then being the head coach at a college where there's a variety of duties you've got to play into, and this is your first experience as a head coach. What are your initial thoughts on this idea of Deion returning to the sidelines as a head coach?
Well, and Deion's been coaching the Under Armour game, you know, for years and years. He's a high school OC for his son's team. His son's obviously highly recruited and going to graduate, you know, a big-time quarterback and move on. He's probably not going to Jackson State. Now, if Deion could get him to go to Jackson State, that'd be really nice. But
that'd be cool. That'd be really cool.
That'd be awesome. But listen, I don't see any problem whatsoever. You talk about experience. There's a lot of guys that don't have experience. Primetime is going to bring primetime players. I can promise you that. Just the name Deion Sanders and all the flamboyancy that comes with it. I think he's learned, you know, at a high school level, and you've been around programs and you try to emulate. The key to all this, man, and it's not a secret. It's how do you find good help? You know, who does he fill out his staff with? It's and I know it sounds stupid, but it's so important, because those are the guys that are going to be coaching week to week. You know, Deion's going to be the face and be out in front, and rightfully so. But you got to surround yourself with, you know, good coaches, good people. And so that'll be interesting. But if I'm Jackson State, why the heck not? I mean, why not bring primetime in? Why not bring that all that notoriety? I mean, it was on ESPN. Mm-hmm. When do you see Jackson State's hires on ESPN? Do you ever see that very often? No, you don't. So it's bringing national exposure, and we'll bring recruiting, and we'll amp up recruiting for Jackson
State. Bro, Deion was on Good Morning America with Strahan, and I was just sitting there, and I'm like, wow, this is the power of Prime, right? Like, that is an incredible moment for Jackson State. And excellent point on the idea of your staff, because we've seen guys like, you know, friends of ours, colleagues of like Herm Edwards and Mac Brown return. And the most important thing those guys have said is surrounding themselves with dudes, because they will be able to win every single locker room conversation, but and recruiting, but game planning and preparation leading up to it. And you've got to have some guys that have that experience behind you to set up a game plan and have coordinators that are strong.
Yep. 100%.
Yeah, good stuff. So we will keep an eye on Jackson State. And that's the one thing that is fascinating of having a big name surrounding your program, because suddenly you're on the radar and you're in the conversation. Also in the conversation is the SEC. And it was official, no surprise. Mac Jones will be the starting quarterback for Alabama as they open up the season this coming weekend. I can't wait. Honestly, I can't wait to see how they play against Missouri. They're favored by 27. The reason why I'm excited, I just want to see the physicality of this defense and the health and that front line. When you look at all the games on the schedule from the SEC vantage point, Georgia, Arkansas, Alabama, Missouri, LSU opening with Miles Brennan after losing over a dozen players and starters. They take on Mississippi State and the Pirate, Auburn, Kentucky, which I talked about, I had circled, Florida, Ole Miss, Tennessee, South Carolina. What stands out in your mind when you look at these matchups?
I want the Pirate. Just give me the Pirate. You know, I want to see Mike Leach in the true air raid throw it 40, 50 times a game. I don't really worry about the running game that much, and just see how this works its way into the SEC against, you know, the best defensive back in college football. And, you know, I know LSU's retooling and reloading. I'm super curious to see what the offense looks like, because I think it's going to take a tremendous step back. And you take away the number one pick. Yeah, you take away also the best coordinator, you know, in Joe Brady and all of college football. So I think LSU fans might get really frustrated with what they watch this year from an offensive standpoint of who they are and what they are. Because, Jamar Chase is gone now, and Clyde Edwards-Helaire, you're watching him ball out for the Chiefs. So naturally it would take a step back. But I think even more so now schematically, it takes a step back because of what it was. So I think, you know, LSU this season, defending champ, going against Mike Leach, give me that. I think Auburn, Kentucky will be awesome. I think Kentucky has a legit shot to win that game. You know, Auburn retooling up front. I feel like we said that every year, by the way, on the offensive line, like just rebuilding that group up front, Bo Nix in his encore. You know, I'm curious to watch him. I'm not sold on Bo Nix. I don't know if you are. I'm not.
No, not yet.
I think he's got some goods inside of him, and I like the way he carries himself. I'm not sold on him as a quarterback yet. And then Stoops, you know, their offensive line is going to be really, really good. Derrick Brown gone, obviously replacing up front. And listen, I know Auburn has done it every year, and they just go, you know, who's the next big freak, and we're just going to plug him in. But losing a ton up front on that defensive line. So, you know, those two games for me are the most exciting, I think, have a chance to be competitive games and with good storylines.
You know, I want to watch Miles Brennan on the first couple of series just to see how he reacts. I can't wait to stare at Eric Gilbert. I've heard so much about this tight end, the freshman out of Georgia. Your neck of the woods, 6'5", 250 pounds. You know about those legendary high school stories. Every town has them. This guy felt like he was the entire state, right? The first tight end to be Gatorade Player of the Year. Your first impressions when you live in that state, you hear a lot about high school players. What have you heard about Eric Gilbert? Because this guy, when he walks on the field, you watch any type of high school tape, you're like, Oh my gosh, that guy's playing tight end. He could be a defensive end. And I know he played a little bit of that. He could play anywhere he wants on the field. What have you heard about the legend of Eric Gilbert?
The crazy thing is he looks like a wide receiver more than he does a tight end. That's what's kind of nuts. Like, he don't look like you say 6'5", 250. He looks 220 and cuts 220. I mean, you give him the ball in space, it's a wrap. He's so good after the catch. He's going to be a matchup nightmare for everybody. Like, he's one of the best tight ends we've ever seen in high school football. And listen, it's high school football, I know, and that doesn't mean anything moving forward about it. Just a guy that is going to look so good in his uniform, you're going to be like, who is that freak? And then he's going to catch the ball. He's going to be great after the catch. You know, especially for a tight end, is going to look more like a wide receiver. So there's just so many things you'll be able to do with that guy to just win. And whether it's bootlegs, whether it's play action, whatever it is, you'll continue to find ways to get Eric Gilbert the rock.
Can't wait to see it. And you know, the usual suspects, of course, the Alabamas, the Georgias, the Floridas. We briefly talked about LSU. Are we sleeping? And you know, we talked a little bit about Kentucky last time on the podcast, and I like them as well this weekend. Are we sleeping on a team like Texas A&M as well as Tennessee heading into the season? When I say sleeping, I'm saying no one's paying attention to those two teams right now in the conversation when you talk about the top part of the SEC.
No, I don't think they'll be there. I'm really curious to watch Tennessee this year. The recruiting has gone up. The excitement level's up. I think they went from 5-6 to 8-5 over the last, you know, first two seasons of Jeremy Pruitt. Now it's season three. Cade Mays comes over from Georgia, who was a starter on the offensive line. Obviously, Trey Smith on the offensive line. He's the best offensive lineman in all of college football. So you're talking about a good offensive line. Jared Guarantano is the key. The whole season revolves around him. I think Tennessee's defense is going to be good. They obviously bring back Tutu and the linebacking core and so many good players. And I think Tennessee has a shot to be really, really good, you know, but it's all going to revolve around the quarterback. And can they take that next step? But this will be fun to watch from Tennessee's standpoint. A&M, you know, I think there's some people that I've heard that think with Kellen Mond and him taking another step that maybe they're in the conversation for being the second best team in the West. And I don't see it. Kellen Mond's interesting to me. Sometimes he looks like I want to buy in, bro. I want to buy stock. And then sometimes I want to throw that stock out the window really quickly. You know, I mean, sometimes it looks great. It obviously would need more consistency and Jimbo's done a great job recruiting, but I would say those teams are not going to finish in the top two on their sides. But if Tennessee finishes three and is battling with Florida and, and Georgia and throwing their name in the mix of the SC East, and that program is definitely already on the rise. A&M, can they take that next step? Because we've seen them take steps and be competitive. Can they be in that top two or three? That to me is their ceiling, you know, for me. I don't know how you feel about it.
Well, Tennessee's only favored by 3.5 points against South Carolina. So Pruitt's done a fantastic job. And I agree with you on the growth of this team. I'm curious to see that development, because really in year three of any college coach, year three and four, you can start judging the program and where it's at when you get your own guys in there. So this is a key start. They can't afford to trip up on the road at Williams-Bryce Stadium in Columbia.
Hey, and by the way, real quick, are you interested in South Carolina? Because I feel like here's what I'm curious about. You know, Mike Bobo comes over from Colorado State from their head coaching job, and he's the OC now, which we've seen him have success in the SEC, but he brings his quarterback too. You know, Colin Hill's a transfer from Colorado State. He's the starting quarterback. Helinski's not. Remember, Helinski had some great moments a year ago, but does that offense now get rolling? Because it seems like the defense is always pretty good for South Carolina, and Muschamp always does a great job. I'm really curious to see if that hire pays off, because I think if they improve a lot, that's another team that is going to be fun to watch and see. I think that these two teams are battling for third in the SEC East and kind of positioning, and right out the gates, we get to see them.
Well, listen, here's the one thing that Will can't afford to do, though. He can't afford to lose this team early, especially when you see the start that they've had. And when you go 4-8, it felt like 3 years ago they turned the corner, right? And they're 9-4, then 7-6. But you at 4-8 trying to figure out the quarterback position, they've got to get this quarterback position, this offense right, like now. And I know that's tough to say in a pandemic, but there's a ton of pressure on Muschamp this season to figure it out. He can't afford to go, you know, 4-6 this season. They've got to figure this stuff out with the quarterback, because they haven't been able
now.
To. Right?
Not later, like now. Like,
yes.
Well, I mean, and that's why you bring in a new OC, right? I mean, that's why you make a change, and Bobo's highly respected for what he's been able to accomplish. So I think, you know, listen, when you're a head coach and you make changes on the defensive side of the ball, offensive side of the ball consistently, and you make those changes, there's only one person to replace next. Okay. Mm-hmm. I mean, Tom Herman is a perfect example, by the way.
First guy I thought of. Yep.
Two OCs, two DCs in his tenure. Hasn't been phenomenal by any stretch of the imagination. So now you look at him, and you know, Mike Yurich is calling plays. Chris Ash is on defense. So, you know, you don't have anybody else after this. After you make your changes at your OCs and your DC spot, the next arrow points at you to be the guy that takes the blame and gets, you know, and you have to go find work.
And you can't make an excuse too that, hey, instability of quarterback when you have Ellinger there as they get ready for Texas Tech after a week off. I do want to say, get your thoughts on Oklahoma State, because Oklahoma State's at home. They're favored by 8.5 against a West Virginia team and Neil Brown, year number two. And they got a quarterback that can sling it in Daigie. How do you even approach Oklahoma State here if they don't have Spencer Sanders? Because it felt like Tulsa gave them that game.
Well, yes, I hear what you're saying. It felt like Tulsa gave them the game. Everybody's talked about Wallace and Hubbard and Sanders and how good of a trio that is. And yep. And now early in the game, you lose your quarterback, your main person. And Hubbard didn't get going either, by the way. I think he broke his streak of 15 or 16 straight games with 100 yards.
It was 11 straight. And he had, I think, 93, and he fumbled early on. Like, he was not sharp.
Had 27 carries, I think, too, something like that. Like, they fed him. It wasn't lack of work, but here's the thing. What are we going to find out from the quarterback spot? Remember the big old huge freshman, that kid was like 6'5". You know, 220 pounds. That Shane Ellingsworth.
Shane Ellingsworth.
In.
Yep.
Yeah, he comes in and I think he was almost perfect throwing the football and completed it. And the offense looked kind of different, but it's definitely not what we expected to see. Here's the thing: we talked about it on game day, homie, and Kirk, and everybody bloviated to me about Oklahoma State and Dez has him in his Final Four. The same issue to me has been percolating around this program. It's still there. The offensive line. When you watch the offensive line for Oklahoma State, they don't push people around. They're not overly physical. I don't know if they're good enough up there, but I will say this. Wallace is awesome. And a 50-50 ball is not 50-50. It's 80-20 with him out wide. And if they can get Chuba going, you can make life very easy on a quarterback. And I think Sanders could make life easy on this offensive line. But, you know, Illingsworth coming in is he's a statue. He's a big dude that's not a mobile quarterback. So this offense will definitely have to morph and adjust depending on, you know, Sanders and his availability. But I don't even I didn't remotely look at Oklahoma State week one and think they were a college football contender or a contender in the Big 12. If I'm saying he's got to go score with Spencer Rattler.
Yeah. Oh,
or Sam Ellinger.
Listen, we were anticipating regardless every Oklahoma State game was going to be first to 50, right? And if you can't score, it's not going to be pretty in the conference. You don't have stability at quarterback. So they're going to Illingsworth, again, is a true freshman quarterback. They went with a junior college transfer in Ethan Bullock, and it didn't really work. So they said, all right, see what we can do. We need a spark because, again, the struggle muffin against Tulsa. If Tulsa converted at least one third down, they were 0 for 12, and the time clock mismanagement, my goodness, was not a good look for Philip Montgomery, who needed a win like that. I think the program desperately needed a win like that, and they couldn't pull it off. So the Cowboys, two Cowboys, the professional team and the college team survived last weekend. As we take a look at some of the other matchups this week, I really, and you and I briefly talked about this, I really like to see what Cincinnati can do against Army. And I want to see how Army responds against Cincinnati because this is a punch you in the face type of game.
Yeah, and I like Army. I really like Army. I like what I've seen from them so far this season. Listen, we know what they do, bro. I think their quarterback's attempted two passes in the season. I'm not kidding, by the way. I think I saw literally it was two passes. They rushed the ball for almost 400 yards a game, number one in the country. But the biggest difference between Army so far and Army, you're going to tell me, oh, well, Army, you know, look who they've played. They've played Middle Tennessee State. They've played UL Monroe. They've given up 7 points. I don't care who they play because they are not – typically a juggernaut on defense. They just aren't. They typically really struggle. But when I've watched Army play defense, they look physical. They look good. You know, John, I think Rattigan at linebacker, John Rattigan, you know, he's made every play known to man so far between interceptions and causing fumbles and getting sacks and scoring touchdowns. And like, it's going to be very interesting to watch because I think they're going to play very physical. Again, Cincinnati, I don't trust their offense yet. You know, I know you wanted to tell me all the great stats about rushing touchdowns and stuff, but they still got to prove it on that side of the football. Army's offense is an equalizer. It's a, you know, you can have a great defense and a great defensive scheme, but that triple option is just a pain in your butt. It is an absolute pain. So if Army, their defense plays like they have been playing and keeps this low scoring, the Army can upset Cincinnati, and this could be a, you know, a big upset just out the gates to start in the American.
I really like Desmond Ridder, but again, that triple option, maybe my favorite stat heading into the weekend, Army's attempted 9 passes. If you look at the breakdown of their rushing attack, 13 guys have had at least one carry, and they're averaging as a team 6 yards a carry. It's fascinating. They've already got 3 100-yard runners, including their quarterback and Christian Anderson. I love watching how Army knows its identity year in and year out. They're not going to change, and then you have to adjust to them. They do not have to adjust to anybody. They'll do what they know. They do it how they identify. So that's a great matchup. There's a couple other games that I think are going to be pretty good matchups, and one of them is Louisville-Pitt. I'm curious to see how Louisville responds, and Pitt had some struggles early against Syracuse, and then they righted the ship. How do you view a game like this? Have you seen enough from Pitt? Have you seen enough from Louisville to form an opinion where you're comfortable saying, I like this team? Because the line is, I think, 3.5.
I was very frustrated with Louisville's defense this weekend. And it was the big plays and the miscommunication. And it wasn't
– Pollock, on two plays, they were practicing social distancing because it was ridiculous. The miscommunication with the linebacker on that broken play was so ridiculous.
That's not what I expect from them, by the way. I think Scott Satterfield does one of the best jobs in college football, and I believe in him tremendously. Listen, if you want to know what Narduzzi does, he'll have five guys that'll have a sack. Like, he's going to blitz your face off for Pittsburgh. That's just what they do. The only thing about Pitt, man, I'm watching Kenny Pickett this past week against Syracuse, and I'm watching their ground game, and it's okay. It's not great. Their offense with Mark Whipple at second year, if you expect to jump, I don't think offensively they have enough. I don't look at them and see any quality that I go, that's really, really good, or that's going to be what carries the day for them. Louisville has an identity. Louisville knows who they are. I don't think their defense is going to get exposed like it did against Miami, because I don't see De'Aaron King or those other freaks, you know, coming off the bus. But I like Louisville in this. All these teams, all these games we talked about, the sad thing is that I feel really comfortable with my pick already in my head. So this is bound to go really wrong this weekend. I mean, really wrong.
Now, you guys are heading game day, Florida State, Miami. You're going to go to Coral Gables again. I look forward to seeing how Miami responds now with more of the spotlight on them and the conversation shifting on, hey, is this team back? We're not going to discuss that. We briefly did that in the last pod. How are they going to handle adversity? And then the other side is the adversity with Florida State. We're going to stay in the ACC, though, and it's your first dude of the week. Give it to me. What'd you see on tape that popped out?
Give me number 5-1 for Duke. And Victor Mukheji. Duke comes off the edge. He'll play inside. He'll play outside. Plays really, really hard. He had 2.5 sacks against Boston College. By the way, could have had more. Pressures the quarterback consistently. I tell you what, Chris Rump's another guy that comes off the edge for Duke. Duke's defense, they gave up some big plays that were kind of head scratching, but it's not because of Mukheji. He's a guy that you'll see 5-1 flashing across the screen all over the place. Really does a great job using his hands, rushing the passer consistently. So he's a dude I watched on tape that I was like, yeah, he stands out. I like that guy. Give me 5-1 on my squad.
And Duke now on the road against Virginia, which opens up its schedule for the first time. They've had
some
games that have been pushed back, and that game's on the ACC network on Saturday at 4 p.m. Eastern. I'm very curious to see how Virginia comes out after waiting patiently and new quarterback going for Virginia Tech also opening up their schedule. They take on NC State. That game, NC State against Wake, I'm not sure if you were going back and forth while watching the Louisville-Miami game. NC State-Wake was fantastic in the second half if you like offense. The back and forth. A really good watch on the ACC network. Let's make some picks here. You ready to go through some games, our first of the season?
I think I have an idea, though, for our picks. I think we should start the year with, like, you're 5 up right now.
Oh, don't do that.
Last year it was so out of hand.
Don't pat.
You know what?
Man.
We only got 10 weeks this year, so maybe you won't look so bad in the end when I destroy
Taylor,
your face.
This is ridiculous. Don't patronize me. I wish Taylor kept score this, because now you're just going to every
I'll
time we talk about it,
year,
you're going to add more
that.
Wins to your
I'll
thing.
Keep score
to
for just, you this year. I'll keep score. Just go ahead. Give me the first game and give me your pick so you don't have to steal mine.
I don't think you're good at math. I trust Taylor. So we'll go with Taylor on keeping score. All right. Let's start with a game that both of us have talked about repeatedly. Kentucky at Auburn. Who you got?
Oof.
Yeah,
I really want to pull the trigger for Kentucky. I really, really want to pull the trigger. I don't think I have the gumption to do so, but I'm not going to pull it completely. I will take Auburn. I tell you what, I'm really curious to see, homie G, is Chad Morris in this offense, because if and it's a big if Gus Malzahn will actually step out of the way and let Chad Morris do Chad Morris.
Do you think that's possible? No. Do you think that's possible?
Probably not. But I think Auburn's too talented. Schwartz makes big plays, and then I think they barely escape Kentucky.
I'm going with Terry Wilson. The return of Terry Wilson.
Love it.
So, let's start out the gate. Here's the thing, though. Taylor, you notice this. We'll figure this out and maybe play this back, because he was on the fence and deep down he wanted to pick Kentucky. And if Kentucky wins, he's going to like, oh, you know what? I actually had Kentucky. There's no backtracking here, especially when you go on game day and you change your pick on the air.
I've already made my super dog pick for game day, and it might be that game.
Yeah. Well, shoot, if you're getting 10.5 points, it's not a bad play. All right, let's go. Keep on going down, and we're going to pick some games that we feel are close. I think the SEC, when you look at all the favorites, you're with me. They pick them all, right? Even though you were leading Kentucky, you're going with Auburn favored by 10.5. Let's go to that Louisville Pitt game. Pitt's favored by 3. Where are you going with this?
Louisville. It ain't close for me.
I'm with you. I pick Louisville as well.
I'm writing this down, by the way.
They come in as the dogs. How about Army Cincinnati?
See, you know, it sucks. It sucks when the picks count. Like when I'm going against you and you're keeping score, because I would love to pull the trigger on Army. And I think Army might win. And the Army's getting more, right? They're getting like 11.5.
They're getting 14.
14?
Yeah.
By the way, that's my super dog for the week. I'll definitely take Army. I think I'll take Cincinnati. With Ritter at QB, a little more balance on offense, but I think it's going to be a struggle bus. I really do. But I will take Cincinnati, and I'll take the favorite just because I want to beat you.
I'm taking Cincinnati as well. I do not think they are going to cover. 14 is a lot of points. Oklahoma State, West Virginia.
What's the line of this one, Mr.
This is 8.5. Oklahoma State laying the points.
Yeah. I tell you what, if you watched West Virginia a year ago when they first started, they looked atrocious. They couldn't run the football, one of the worst in the league. They're running the football and throwing the football really, really, really well. I know they haven't done anything yet of any note, but they're better than Tulsa. I'll take Oklahoma State and Chuba and the talent, but this is another one that I wouldn't be surprised if Oklahoma State lost.
I'm taking West Virginia.
It's a good pick. I like that pick by you.
I feel really good about West Virginia. That's another super dog pick you can go with game day.
And that's 8?
8.5.
Dang.
See what I see? I'm not afraid to take the dogs. You now all of a sudden you've gotten tight, and now you're just picking all the favorites.
I'm not going to lie. I did get tight.
It's incredible. Taylor, you notice all the conversation, all the chatter, and then put up or shut up, and now let's just go with the favorites. Tennessee, South Carolina.
Let's go with another favorite. I'll go with Tennessee. I think Tennessee and that offensive line is going to be really special. I mean, I think they're going to be really good. And then defensively. So I think Tennessee wins this game.
Okay. And finally, Virginia
Tech.
Where'd
you go? Whoa. Where'd you go?
I'm with you. I picked Tennessee. Yeah. Okay, well, yeah.
Open your mouth.
I was so into, like, you know, I'm with you with the favorites, aside from Kentucky, Auburn in the conference. So I go with Tennessee. NC State, Virginia Tech. Tech is favored by 7 in their opener at Lane Stadium.
Wow. I'll go Virginia Tech. I'll go Hendon Hooker, QB. I think he's pretty special, but I like that NC State's already played a game. I don't like that they gave up 40 plus points to Wake Forest, but I like that they played a game. I'll take Hendon Hooker. I think he's really good QB.
NC State, you know, Bailey Hockman, I thought played pretty well, and Ricky Thompson ran the ball hard.
NC State.
There was creativity for NC State, but I'm picking Virginia Tech. It's their first game of the season. I think they're going to be really amped to play ball. Weird vibe at Lane Stadium, one of the best venues in all of sports.
Not this weekend. It won't be.
No, it won't be. It won't. It's just, and say, that, it, that, that no will home, play a role. I think that's going to play a role.
Advantage anymore, brother.
No,
it's gone.
The momentum is gone, but I'm still taking Virginia Tech. All right. So Taylor's written all this down.
I wrote all of it down, bro. So I got them all right in front of me.
You can't backtrack, and we'll play this by ear, brother. Have fun. Miami, Florida State. Looking forward to seeing you guys on game day. Stay safe. And I can't wait. I can't wait to see your texts, especially the trash talking on Saturday. And big thanks, of course, to David Pollack. Always fun. It's great to finally get some picks. We have enough games on the schedule where we could take a look at some of the close ones and break it down, and also have his first due to the week. Looking forward to what he has to say as he switches all his picks on game day, because that's what he usually does on a Saturday after we have our podcast during the week. Also, thank you to Adam Rittenberg, our insiders from Adelson to Dinich to, you know, the guys that we bring in, Rittenberg and Pepper with left and right, Maisel, you know, they've been just great. and making sure that we can keep you up to date. And I promise we will continue to do that here on the podcast, bring you the information, but also some context as well as opinions. And big thanks to Taylor Schwenk on the other side, who every single week has to deal with Pollock. And that's sainthood right there. So we hope you guys stay safe. Fingers crossed on heading into the weekend that your team can play and social distance, wear a mask, stay safe.